This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Do you feel nervous about the food supply in coming years as the climate goes extreme? Here is a new wrinkle. The weak link in the global food chain that stretches to your door may be human. Agricultural workers face deadly levels of heat and humidity right when they need to plant or harvest crops that feed billions of people. To find the risks in a warming world, a Columbia University undergraduate student teamed up with scientists at the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory. They just published the paper, Increased Extreme Humid Heat Hazard Faced by Agricultural Workers. We reached the lead author, Connor Dunn-Diaz. Connor, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much, Alec. It's a pleasure to be here.
Most of our listeners buy their food at a grocery store. Why should we worry about conditions for agricultural workers as climate change ramps up?
Well, especially nowadays, the global food system is very connected. We have globalized logistics systems that are transporting food from thousands and thousands of miles away. So when we think about a warming world, we have to think about all of these different links in the supply chain and how are the distribution of food, and especially the impact of heat on the laborers, the crop workers who are harvesting this food, is impacting each one of those links in the supply chain.
And the key concept for our survival in extreme heat is the wet bulb temperature. It's not easy to grasp. How would you explain it?
Yeah, so wet bulb temperature is, at least here in the United States, akin to what we often see as the heat index. They're not exactly a one-to-one relationship, but what the heat index tries to capture is the combined effect of the what we call the dry bulb temperature, just the air temperature that you would feel outside, and the impact from humidity in the air. So we can think of wet bulb like the heat index, or the, you often hear it called, the real feel temperature outside, as trying to capture the combined effect of air temperature and humidity. If you're outside and it's a particularly muggy day, you're going to feel as if the temperature outside is much hotter than maybe just your dry bulb thermometer hanging outside the window might tell you.
And when it comes to heat and humidity, at what point does discomfort turn to possibly fatal danger?
So the threshold we used in our study was 27 degrees centigrade wet bulb. So this is roughly the boundary that the National Weather Service in the United States has identified as the boundary for danger to human health. Beyond this, when we reach 35 degrees centigrade wet bulb temperature, this has been identified in previous work as the theoretical lethal limit of wet bulb temperature.
I interviewed Dr. Daniel J. Vasilio. He's a postdoctoral scientist at Penn State, and his tests on actual humans, he used students, showed that people became uncomfortable and ranging towards sick at a much lower temperature. So I'm glad that you chose the 27-degree wet bulb temperature instead of 35.
Yeah, that's right. There's actually been a few papers that have come out in the past year that have tried to revise the differences between these thresholds in terms of discomfort, danger, and specific impacts to human health. We feel pretty comfortable that our 27 degrees is an appropriate threshold for the work we did here. But of course, there are so many different factors to take into account when we think about all the different activities that people might be doing outside, how acclimated they are to their specific climate, that these thresholds might be more variable than we think for different populations.
Well, most weather watchers are looking for absolute high temperatures, the dry bulb temperature. But as you cited in your report, a 2020 study led by Pinya Wang found extreme high wet bulb temperature is more sensitive to the changing climate than extreme high dry bulb temperature. Hot and humid events are intensified by global warming more than those hot, dry days. Are we looking at the wrong risks?
Yeah, that's right. I think that you know, shifting our focus toward a measure like wet bulb or heat index puts us in the right direction to better capture the impacts of climate change on the human body here. Like you said, just dry bulb temperature doesn't really capture all of the variability that might really be impacting humans the most.
So how did you work out the risks for agricultural workers as climate change gets worse?
So the premise of our study was to combine three different sources of information. So we have our climate information, and for us, that was the daily maximum wet bulb temperature. So we have our climate information. Then we try and combine this with agricultural information. Because we're looking at the impact of agricultural workers specifically, we wanted to nail down what parts of the year these workers are most likely to be planting or harvesting in the field. So we took crop planting and harvest season dates from the global crop calendar data set, and we tried to line this up with our climate information and our threshold for danger to human health. We looked all around the globe, and we simply asked, if we are in a planting or harvest season for a specific crop, we looked at 12 in this study, if the workers are present in the field, are they exposed to a daily maximum wet bulb temperature greater than this threshold?
And so what crops are most affected when field conditions go beyond human tolerance?
So after looking at our data, what we found was that rice, maize, sorghum, and soybeans were the most impacted crops across the globe, which is notable because rice and maize specifically are two massively cultivated staple crops across the world.
Well, I'll note for our American listeners that maize is basically the same thing as corn, so that's what we're talking about there. Some places will be too hot to work during the day as long as 3 months of the year, you've found. Where are those first intolerable hotspots?
Yeah, so some of the most impacted regions in the world that we found for rice and maize, but also for many of the other crops in our study, are in Southeast Asia, the Philippines, Vietnam, parts of China. We also found potentially intolerable conditions in equatorial South America. Coastal Mexico is another region near Baja California that pops up. The Gulf of Guinea in Western Africa also is particularly exposed as well.
So I guess you didn't count places like Dubai or places on the Gulf because they are desert areas anyway. You were looking at big crop growing areas.
That's right. So ultimately, we were restricted in our analysis based on where we have data, where we have all of the data that we need for the analysis. So not only did we have to know that crops were harvested in a specific region, we had to have a fine enough resolution data on the planting and harvest dates for those crops. So those aren't completely available from these agricultural data sets, which, as we note in our paper, is a huge area for improvement. The more data that we can collect on agriculture and agricultural workers, where they're harvesting, what times of day they're harvesting, how many laborers are in the field, this is really important data that we're going to need in the future to be able to better pin down where these hazards are across the world. But places like Dubai do see extreme wet bulb temperatures coming off of the coast there. So while the hazard is there, data and large agricultural data in those countries might just not be available.
So have the amount of days too extreme for outdoor farm work increased since 1979? And is that speeding up as our emissions mount?
Yeah, so across our study period here, it was notable that in the past 20 years specifically, we saw most of the increase in these potential hazardous days to agricultural workers. Not only was the increase apparently nonlinear in these last 20 years, the impact from El Nino events was much larger, especially since the 1997-1998 El Nino event.
That's a little worrying because an El Nino heating just began around September of this year, 2023, and other studies found the worst of El Nino comes in the second or even third year, not right away. Do you expect extra heat stress for agricultural workers coming up in 2024 or 25?
Based on our analysis, I would. The 2016 El Nino was the largest spike in potential hazards to agricultural workers that we found. That was a very big El Nino event. And so I think it's reasonable to assume that we could see another spike like that for our next large El Nino event.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. No sign up, just the latest info, free for all. Ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex. Our guest is American researcher Connor Dunn-Diaz. We're talking about heat and humidity going beyond human tolerance and impacts on the global food chain. Connor, surely humans will find answers. They can work at night or retreat to cooling huts periodically. Maybe robots can do the harvesting. Given the scale of what you found, do you really think there are ways to adapt and keep the big global food chain going?
Yes, I do. I do. I think that one of the benefits of our study here is that it provides critical information to policymakers, to people in the agricultural industry, to begin to start thinking about how we can change our agricultural practices to best protect the workers, which really are the backbone of our global food system. Now, previous work has shown that our adaptability, different measures in keeping farm workers cool and healthy during the day might become less effective under these warming scenarios. But personally, I think if we take this information that we have at hand here, we can begin to think through ways of adapting our food system to, again, protect our agricultural workers who are holding up our global food system.
So should governments set and enforce outdoor worker safety limits? And is that practical when millions of people must plant and harvest or starve?
Yes, I think so. I think we have an opportunity here to start implementing some of these limits from the perspective of being able to keep our workers in the field during these critical seasons. I noticed a couple years ago during the Pacific Northwest heat wave, I remember hearing a report about strawberry harvesters harvesting overnight during those really, really brutally hot weeks there. You know, that might seem like an extreme to us now, harvesting throughout the night, but if we begin to establish limits and regulations around when people can be doing work outside, we can keep our agricultural system going.
And studies show that hospital visits go up during these hot, humid heat waves, and even chronic kidney disease in Central America has been attributed to this. So there are real-world consequences for those workers.
That's right. I think we're at a point here where we're beginning to get a critical mass of information linking these brutally hot heat waves to real impacts, not just agricultural workers. All sorts of outdoor workers, construction workers are also found in the literature around the impacts of heat hazards. These really do have real impacts on people. The kidney disease research that you mentioned was particularly startling to me, in that that seems some of the best evidence we have at the moment that is linking our warming climate to very granular person-to-person impacts.
And the study also highlights climate injustice. The people living in the regions shown in the maps in your paper, hardest hit by the heat and humidity, they're among the poorest. They hardly contributed to climate change, but they suffer most. Your thoughts?
We've cited some of the sociological research that has pointed out that, yes, agricultural workers are often some of the most vulnerable populations across the world. And I think it's really important to keep this in mind when we think about, you know, the next time you go to the grocery store, the next time you sit down to have a meal, you know, there are at-risk populations across the world that are working very hard in hazardous conditions here to make that happen. Moving forward, we really need to keep front and center the human dimension of our food system here in light of the fact that these laborers are so at risk across the world.
Do you think that if these crops fail because people just can't get out there to harvest them or to plant them, that that might stir up more immigration in safer countries to live in?
It seems plausible. I mean, I can't really, you know, that's not really my area of expertise. But I think what you're hitting on here is a great point to make, and it's the fact that we're looking at compound events here. You know, we often think about impacts to the crops themselves under extreme weather events, and now our study is looking at impacts to the human dimension of the agricultural system. There are follow-on impacts as well. Now, you know, what those may be in terms of immigration and different regional impacts to society, I don't know, but it's important to keep in mind that there are interlinking impacts that happen to society because of these climate extremes.
Well, although we don't really know it in the developed world, about 27% of all workers in the world are agricultural workers. So this is really a key safety point that we need to know and something that we can do to protect people. We have been speaking with Connor Dunn-Diaz. Look for his new open access paper, Increased Extreme Humid Heat Hazard Faced by Agricultural Workers. I will put links to follow up in my weekly show blog, published Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Connor, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you so much, Alex. It was a great time being on.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.